Why should we cherish objectivity as if ideas were innocent, as if they don't serve one interest or another? Surely we want to be objective if that means telling the truth as we see it, not concealing information that may be embarrassing to our point of view. But we don't want to be objective if it means pretending that ideas don't play a part in the social struggle of our times, that we don't take sides in those struggles. Indeed, it is impossible to be neutral. In a world already moving in certain directions where wealth and power are already distributed in certain ways, neutrality means accepting things the way they are now. It is a world of clashing interests, war against peace, nationalism against internationalism, equality against greed, and democracy against elitism. And it seems to me both impossible and undesirable to be neutral in those conflicts. And that quote comes from Howard Zinn. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. One really must wonder what it is about the human psyche that keeps us all so divided. I mean, sure, we have a lot of belief systems that have been put in place. We've got certain religious belief systems that tend to divide people. We've got national boundaries and patriotism, which divides people. And we also have social structure, class division, race division, all sorts of ways of keeping us divided, all sorts of reasons why we remain divided. But really, what is it that creates them all? What is it that stops us seeing each other as valid? It's a question that has troubled me for many, many years. I mean, I can see in the recent trip that I made that people are very much divided from each other in many ways, but what I also saw was that they are all essentially the same. Everywhere I went, once I got people down on a personal level, I saw them all as simply mirrors of myself, reflections of myself. I saw them all as being as human as each other. It doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. It doesn't matter whether you are black or white, whether you're Israeli or Palestinian. It doesn't matter how divided you may be by your culture. Ultimately, on an intimate level, on a personal level, on a one-to-one level, every single person that I interacted with was essentially the same. All were very human, and all were essentially very fragile. Even the strong ones, say, may appear strong on the surface, but inside, all are just as fragile and sensitive as everybody else. So what keeps us divided? What keeps us in a state of competition with each other? What keeps us having stuff with each other all the time? I mean, sure, we've got all of the mechanisms that have been put in place to do it. And, of course, we've got money supply, which is designed to create scarcity and thereby put people in a state of shortage and in a state of competition with each other. And as I said, we've got all the social division and class division and stuff that's presented to us by the television of what we should be, which causes us to compete with each other. But the question is, what causes us to buy into it? I mean, everybody can look at the system and they can see how corrupt the system is and how much the system does not serve the needs of humankind. And yet, if we attempt to restructure the system or stand up against it, we do so within the parameters provided to us by the system. When really, I believe what we should be doing is talking to those who run the system in a communal fashion. We need to simply realize that these people are individuals. They're just human beings. They're not anything better than anybody else. And the government is simply rules written down on pieces of paper. It isn't like it's an actual thing. The government only really exists on paper. And I believe we should be sitting down in council with these people in many ways. If we wish to change things, we need to talk to the human being, talk to the other members of mankind, our species. Don't talk to the system, talk to the individuals within the system. I mean, I know some of them are very closed off, but if they are, well, okay, go one level higher, find somebody else above that. I mean, there has to be a way for the human species to simply step back from this system and kind of just sit down and powwow. I mean, we obviously have to change things, folks. It can't go on the way it is. I mean, look here in Australia, folks, it's just getting out of control with the carbon tax and the price of electricity and the amount of control systems that are being put in by this government. They say Australia is actually number two now of the most controlled countries on earth, number one being China, number two being Australia. Australia really is one of the most controlled countries on the face of the planet. It's just that the people don't know it. And we have to stop this, folks. We have to stop it. We have to find a way of stopping it. And what I've been attempting to present to people on these shows is methods we can use to do this, but it takes the people. It takes a united people. I mean, I could stand up against the system, and I do intend to. If it ever approaches me, I'm going to stand up and face the consequences of whatever happens. But I will not take a backward step to it. But how do I do it without the people standing behind me? How do I ever get away from it? How do I ever really make a difference if I don't have the weight of numbers standing behind me? And so that's why I've attempted to bring the information that I have to the world. I've attempted to help shift the paradigm in as much as I've attempted to help shift people's perspective, shift their way of looking at things. I think that we're in a really precarious position, folks, and we need to shift the focus back to ourselves. We need to realize what we are. We need to realize the power we have to stand up against this system, and we really need to do it because things are just getting out of control. But we still can fix things, folks, and I think the opportunity to do so is being handed to us on a silver platter. And I think that what we're being presented with here, folks, in December 2012 is a tipping point, and we're being presented with two options. One option is not so good, and the other option is very good. And the first option is for us to leave things as they are and allow the ship of state to run along the direction it's currently going and for things to simply run their natural course. And well, I mean, if the current trends continue and prices continue to rise in accordance with the carbon tax the way they have since its introduction, then in the next couple of years, we're going to see most of the people of this country dispossessed. We're going to see more and more homelessness. We're going to see a further dividing of the population where we have the super rich and the very poor. And there won't be anything left in between. There will be no middle class within the next few years. And this is all part of the first option. And this is going to bring about an enormously bad situation if we don't nip it in the bud now. And I believe the way we have to do that is to step outside of the system and discuss things on a rational level. And that's really the second option, folks. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is people coming into their personal power, people understanding who and what they are, because that's really what it all comes down to. You see, we need to know ourselves enough and have faith in ourselves enough to start speaking out about things in the right way and from the correct perspective. We need to formulate some way of having a meeting with our politicians even. I mean, sitting down and talking to these people, having some sort of public debate with these people, be it on television or whatever, I don't know, I'd be happy to participate, but we need to find a way of bringing this knowledge to the ears of the general public that isn't hearing it. And I firmly believe that we don't even need to talk about conspiracies. We don't need to talk about 9/11. We don't need to talk about chemtrails. We don't need to talk about any of the things that may upset people. All we really need to do is to create an arena whereby some rational people can sit down and ask these people serious questions in a public format, in a way that they can't escape. They actually have to sit there and answer the questions. And we need to ask the hard questions and do it in such a way that the public can see and can hear the answers that these people offer. And of course, it may actually be easy to arrange something like this were it not for the mainstream media and the spin that the mainstream media puts on things. I can't emphasize enough how much people need to switch off the mainstream media. Don't listen to what these talking heads on the news tell you from their cue cards, and don't listen to the spin that they put on things and the ridicule, the snide way they present certain stories. I mean, the influence that the mainstream media has upon public opinion is absolutely phenomenal. And again, the question has to be asked, why do people buy into it? Why are they so ready to believe the garbage that is spoon-fed to them by these sources? It's incredible. So this is why we need to have something that's very public, and it needs to be done in a very calm and very rational way. Because if it's done in a calm and rational enough way, then the media can't put a spin on it. It simply is what it is, and any intelligent people will hear what's actually being said, regardless of any media spin or any media hype. And if we're not able to do this, and the only platform that people are able to have is a legal platform, well then, every single court case and every single legal proceedings that anybody involves in, they need to use it as a platform to promote a political view. They need to use it as a platform to bring key issues to the attention of the public. They need to bring the issue of trust to the attention of the people in every single court case that they go to. Any interaction with these people needs to be used as a political platform. I mean, we have to start taking the fight to the streets. We have to start taking the fight to the courts. We have to start taking the fight to the judicial system. We have to address this in every single way that we can, in every single platform that is available for us to do so. And any chance that anybody gets to speak out about the breach of trust that our governments are currently committing, they need to speak out about it at every single available opportunity. And I'm just sort of throwing ideas around here, folks. I'm just attempting to find ways of taking this to the next level. I mean, it's one thing to do radio shows and to post clips online. It's one thing to make movies and distribute movies. But we need to be taking the fight to the system and doing it in the correct way. Doing it in a rational way. And I believe the way we do that is by simply remembering who and what we are. You've got to remember that you are a flesh and blood member of mankind. And those who are doing the things that they do to you are simply the same. And what they are using to do it are simply rules that have been written down on pieces of paper. And if these rules presume to inhibit your ability to be all that you can be, then are not those people whom you elected as trustees to act as your administrators for society, are they not in breach of trust for even constructing a system which presumes to limit your ability to be all that you can be? And that's the way it needs to be approached. And I really can't think of a better way of approaching it. And what I've been saying here is that we need to start using this, and we need to start taking it in every direction that we can, and we need to use every platform that is available for us to do so, be it legal, be it political, be it council meetings, be it anything that the council or the government attempts to do to repress the people, be it smart meters, be it carbon tax, be it anything, be it a police officer or a parking officer telling you you can't park at a certain place or that you can't camp on the beach for the night, be it anything the government does to attempt to stop you from doing anything that is not causing damage to anybody else or harm to anything or anybody else, but is simply you living your life, be it any way the government attempts to limit you, we need to put it back into trust, and we need to approach it, and we need to use the opportunity as a platform to talk about trust. This is what we need to do. And that really is the second option, folks. We have to start using the power that we have, and we have to start questioning authority in every single way that we can, and we need to turn things around. I mean, we're being poisoned and repressed from every single possible angle that they can use to do it. Don't think smart meters are being brought in for your benefit. Nothing the government does is for your benefit. Don't think coal seam gas mining is being done for your benefit. or to improve the economy of the country, because even if it is improving the economy, it's just a temporary band-aid that is being used while the country is completely destroyed to the point where it won't be possible for it to have any economy at all. And again, we get to the wider issue of the economy, because the economy is simply fiction. It's simply an economic model which does not support life and does not support the best needs of humankind, unless humankind chooses to base its existence on an economic model. So we really need to start looking at things in a different way. And we need to take the opportunities that are being provided to us to change things. Opportunities don't come every day, folks, and when they do, you need to seize them with both hands. Now, just to shift topics a little bit, in the world of 2012, we are most certainly seeing a rise in consciousness on this planet. And when I say that, what I'm talking about is a rise in the general awareness on this planet. People are beginning to see the problems that we face. People are beginning to find that life has hit them so hard in the face, and that the realities of their existence are becoming so starkly apparent that they cannot help but notice their enslavement. And this is a good thing, because it is by becoming aware of this enslavement that the opportunity to escape from this system of slavery also becomes apparent. I believe that this is the time that we can do it. This is the time the world woke up. This is the time that we freed ourselves from the shackles that have enslaved our minds and enslaved our bodies for so long. The time that we freed ourselves of the financial tyranny and the economic terrorism that is used to control our lives. The system of fear-based mind control that permeates every single aspect of our existence within this social structure. It's all fear, folks. Whether it's fear of not paying the bills, fear of not having enough money to pay the rent, or fear of what you look like, fear of how you will be judged by your peers, fear of whether you're going to be pulled over and searched on the street by some Gestapo officer, fear that your emails may be monitored, fear that smart meters will be put into your house, fear that you're getting sick from the radiation of your environment and the toxins in your food, fear of economic implosion, fear of environmental degradation, fear of global warming, fear of Fukushima, fear of the oceans dying, fear of the forests being destroyed, and ultimately fear of ever believing that you are the one who has to stop this. Essentially a fear of discovering and using your own personal power. Because that is the one thing that all the other fear, all the constructed fear around us, all the external fear has instilled into us, is a feeling of inadequacy, a feeling of being a single person up against insurmountable odds, a fear of ever having to actually stand up and say, hey, enough is enough. I won't do this anymore. And the fear of what would happen were you to do so. But the important thing to understand when feeling like this is that that's how everybody feels. And the reason people feel that way is because they don't believe they have the support of the community around them. But if you break down the barriers in your community and you get to know people around you, then it becomes easier. It becomes purposeful, and you lose the fear of standing up because you have the strength of numbers. That's why I often come back to talking about the strength of numbers and talking about how you need to break down the divisions in your community and get to know your neighbors. It's such an important thing to do. All the division in the world is illusionary, folks. All of it is manufactured. None of it serves any purpose. And it doesn't matter what sort of division we're talking about. It doesn't matter whether the people over the fence have a different idea or a different religion or anything to you. It doesn't matter, because everybody's perspective is valid, and it's not up to us to push our perspective onto anybody else. I hope it doesn't come across as me doing it that way when I do these shows. I'm not trying to push my perspective onto you. I'm simply offering my perspective to you in a hope that maybe it will help change other people's perspective for the better. mean, of course, I believe my perspective is a valid one. We all do. We all believe our perspective is valid. And I believe that it is by seeing this and seeing that validity in everybody's perspective, whatever their religious persuasion or racial position or sexual preference, it's irrelevant. It's all irrelevant. It doesn't matter. What matters is that they are a beautiful expression of creation. Each person has beauty in their own way, and each person has a valid perspective. I mean, people that have done the wrong thing, I mean, I'm sure there's terrible people that have done terrible things, and you may not see that there is beauty in them, but there must be in there somewhere. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too caring, but that's what I feel. I think that every person in the world serves some purpose. And you can pick me up for using the word person. I don't really care at this stage, folks. I'm sure you know what I'm saying anyway. I want you to know that when I do speak like this, and when I do use words such as person, I can use person and I mean human being, because I'm not speaking legalese. I'm speaking English. I don't care what anybody's legal interpretation of a particular word is. I'm simply speaking from my heart, and I think that all legal interpretation is as fictional as the rest of this system. And I might be very outspoken on some of the shows, but I always do try to keep it coming from my heart, folks, and everything I say comes from my heart. And I don't mean to degrade any one race or any group of people or anything, especially, I mean, like when I've been speaking out about Israel lately. I mean, what I'm talking about there is the political entity of Israel and those who are in control of that situation. I'm not talking about Israeli people. I'm not talking about Jews. I'm talking about the political entity that is Israel. When I talk about the Australian government, I'm talking about that political entity. When I talk about the United States, I'm talking about that political entity. I think the political entities and corporate entities that run this planet, that name themselves Israel or the United States or the Commonwealth of Australia or New Zealand or whatever country they want to call themselves, I think these are the problem. If I speak out about Croatia, I'm not speaking out about the people of Croatia. I'm talking about the government of Croatia, the entity that calls itself Croatia, that dares to believe there are borders on the ground, imaginary borders that people can't cross. I think it's all ridiculous. I don't think the world should have any borders at all. I don't think there should be any nationalism. I think we should have one mankind, one species working in harmony to make this a better world. That's what I think. I don't believe in nationalism. I don't believe in national boundaries. I don't believe in patriotism. I think that culture is actually art and that each person is a valid expression of creation. That's just what I believe, folks. And that's how I intend to live my life. That's how I do live my life. And I think it has great benefits in viewing the world that way. And you can call me what you like for having that type of view. If you are a particularly nationalistic or patriotically oriented person, or if you are particularly drawn to support some legal entity or some corporate entity that chooses to call itself a country, well, that's your issue. But that's just the way I feel about things. I think that when we can view each other as valid, and when we can see mankind as being one human species on this planet, and we can all join together and celebrate life, then we will see some real change. But we're not going to do that while we continue to support an economic model. We're not going to do it while we continue to rape the planet and judge each other and destroy things around us the way we are. I mean, everything we're doing to support this model and to support this economy and to support this fictional society is destroying the very home that we live on. Because that's what the earth is, folks. It's our home. More than anything else, it is our home. It is the most important thing, or should be the most important thing to all of us, because we cannot survive without it. We as a species cannot survive without it, let alone individually. We can't survive without it individually either. So we need to pay attention to this, because I think it is because we've lost our connection to the earth that has caused us to lose our connection with each other, because essentially we've lost our connection to life. We've lost our connection to what real wealth and real value is, because real wealth and value is quality of life, and your quality of life is not measured by plasma TV screens and the latest gadget and sliding walls, glass elevators and gold watches. What it is the quality of your connection to reality, the quality of your connection to life around you, and how well you are able to interact with reality, how much you improved reality by your presence in it, how much it was a pleasure to be in your company, how much good you did in the world, how many people you helped along the way. This is quality of life. Because it's what you put into the world that determines what you ultimately get back from the world. You may put a lot of effort into making a lot of profit from a lot of people, and you may get back a lot of material possessions, but all of them are dead. All of them are things that are external to yourself. Whereas if you give your heart to the world and give your heart to the people around you, what you get back is so much more valuable and so much more valid and so much more rewarding for the soul and rewarding for every single aspect of your life. And the more you give, the more you get, my friends. And what you find is that the pain in your life can be directly measured by the love that you withhold. And I think that more and more people are now becoming aware of this, and they're becoming aware of how easy it would actually be to change their lives and thereby to change the world. And we are truly in a moment of great transition, my friends. Everybody wants something to happen. It's almost as if everybody's sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for it to happen. And as soon as they participate, it will. That's the thing. It's right there waiting for us to grasp. All we have to do is participate. And I think it's break time here, folks, so I'll leave it there for now. And we'll go and have a short break. Thank you for spending this time with me today. And I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the biggest problem that we really face in all of this is our inability to be able to see the people around us as ourselves and our brothers and sisters. It's the judgment that we hold for everybody around us. We are always judging people because we're judging ourselves. We're measuring ourselves up against these people. And if they don't particularly conform to what we believe they should, or they don't look the way we think they should, or they don't act or have the views that we think they should hold, then we judge them as being less than ourselves. Look what we do. It's a very, very ego-driven mentality, but that's what we do. And really, they're all valid. They're all our brothers and sisters, you know. If we could just put it all aside and start seeing people as our brothers and sisters, forget what the television tells you, forget what the billboards say, forget what the fashions dictate, and just look at the human beings around you, the living flesh of the people around you, the unique aspect of creation that they are. Everybody is a unique aspect, a unique perspective, a unique idea of creation, a unique thought in the mind of God, if you will. And that's what everybody is. No difference in anybody, no matter what their beliefs, no matter what they look like, no matter who they are, no matter what they've done. And that's one of the hardest things for humankind to ever really do, really, is to forget about what has been done in the past. And it is. It's very difficult. And people will say, well, you can say that, Max, but what if you had your daughter or your son or your loved one blown up or killed in front of you in some war? Could you forgive the aggressor? Could you forgive the man who raped your son, killed your child, or raped your daughter, raped your wife, raped you? And these are very, very difficult questions, and they're very hard hurdles to overcome. And I can't answer those things in many ways. But in some ways I can say, look, you know, I haven't had a very easy life. My childhood was especially troubling. I had a very, very troubling childhood, folks. And I had things happen to me in my childhood that were horrendous. I wouldn't want anybody to have gone through the childhood that I had in many ways. And yet I have forgiven every single thing that ever happened to me. I've forgiven any person who ever wronged me, and I've grown to appreciate and respect every single bad time, every single instance of anything that ever happened in my life. I've come to respect and appreciate it because every single one of those things and every single aspect of those experiences gave me the understanding of life that I have now and made me into the person that I am today. And I'm very comfortable with who I am today. And I wouldn't have the perspective that I've got of reality, and I wouldn't be able to communicate with people who have been wronged and be able to empathize with them from their level had I not gone through those things myself. And so, yes, I think it is possible to forgive almost anybody of almost anything if you look within and find that real strength that lies there. And it's not weakness that causes you to forgive these people, folks. It's strength. It really is. Because everybody who did anything wrong, they did so because they were disconnected. They were either disconnected or they were a psychopath. And psychopaths, well, of course, there are going to be certain sections of society that are psychopathic. And these people can actually be identified at quite an early age. And these were some of the issues that the shaman used to deal with back in days long past. They would keep a watch out for people within society that had psychopathic tendencies, and there would be steps taken to ensure that these people were never elevated to positions of power. That's another thing we've lost since we've lost our shamanistic traditions, is we've lost the ability to be able to identify psychopaths. And what's happened is psychopaths have actually gotten in control of the system, and they've created a system which can easily identify psychopaths, but what it does is it rewards psychopathic behavior and elevates people who have these tendencies to the top of the food chain. And that's unfortunately what's happened. So, of course, psychopaths are different people, but I still forgive them for being psychopaths because, I mean, they can't help it. It isn't like they wrote it down and planned it and thought, okay, I'm going to be a psychopath. I'm just going to do this to myself to make me a psychopath. And they're just simply that way because that's the way they are. The problem is that we go along with the rules and the dictates they create for us, and we get sucked into their world because we don't know who we are. But I really think we can get through it. And as I was saying, forgiveness is one of the key things. And yeah, look, it's really, really hard to forgive people for what's happened in the past. People just want revenge. Now, I don't think revenge is sweet. I don't think revenge serves any purpose other than to perpetuate the meme, to perpetuate negative energy. I think things should be faced. People who do wrong things should be faced. But I don't really think that revenge should be the ultimate motivation in facing these people. You know, I've often said that it doesn't matter what anybody has done in the past. What matters is what we do from this point forward. And that really is the root of the matter, folks. I mean, that is the most important issue, and it is one of the hardest things that people will ever, ever have to do, is to forgive, to realize that everything everybody did was a result of this system, which has caused people to become so disconnected that they would do these things. To realize this, to forgive, and to move on. Everybody makes mistakes, folks. But the mistakes are not who these people are, unless you choose to perceive them that way. There is a spark of good in everyone. I really do believe that. I believe even a psychopath, somewhere in there is a spark of good. There is something pure because they have life. So there must be something pure in there that created that life. You know, their essence. Maybe something's just slightly out of balance. Well, I would suggest that something's very obviously out of balance. But I don't know. I find it very difficult to actually hate anybody. I get frustrated with people sometimes, but I find it very, very difficult to hate. In fact, it's something that I just don't think I'm really capable of even doing. But I don't know, folks, maybe I'm just a dreamer, but I think that when people can gain this type of understanding and they can start approaching the people around them in this way and start viewing the world through different eyes, then we could really change things overnight. And we need to change it. I mean, it's all going to hell in a handbasket, really, if you look at it. Interesting false flag announcement I saw in Syria as well, the threat that the government of Syria may use chemical weapons against the rebels, and all of this Allah is great and damn all you non-Muslims to hell sort of message, which was just so obviously staged and a false flag, and the United States and these other factions looking for a way into Syria so they can just go in and take over another country. I mean, it's so obviously a false flag that it just blows me out how they're doing these things, folks. I mean, it's so in your face now, especially after that speech with Patrick Clawson that Ken O'Keefe and I covered on the rooftop in Gaza, when they're telling you they're going to stage false flags, and here we see one. Who knows, folks? It may have even been Patrick Clawson wrapped up with a towel around his head doing the announcement and pretending he was a terrorist. I mean, nothing would surprise me with these people, folks. It was probably filmed in some back lot in Langley, or some Mossad guy filmed on the back lot somewhere in Israel. But it was so obviously non-genuine that it blows me out how sloppy they're actually getting and how much they don't care. But probably what is even more of a blowout is how people buy it. I mean, I don't know if anybody actually did buy that one, but I'm sure there were people out there who watched the mainstream who would have believed it was real, even though it was so obviously fake. Yeah, but interesting how they would stage a false flag in Syria now just to get things moving a little bit more. And of course, the timing is impeccable. I mean, you know, right before Christmas. What are we going to see happen over Christmas, folks? Of course, that's if we make Christmas, seeing as how it is the 14th of December today, and my next show will be on the 21st of December 2012, and that's going to be very interesting. Although, folks, I'm kind of telling a fib a little bit here, because it's actually one day later where I am. I'm in the Southern Hemisphere, so it's actually the 15th of December today. I simply say the American date because I realise that I'm speaking to mainly an American audience, as this is the American Voice Radio Network, and it is being broadcast across America. A little bit of logic there from me today. I know it's a surprising thing, folks, but just thinking logically and trying to be considerate to my audience. But the thing is, folks, that the next time that I'll be speaking to you, it will be the 21st of December 2012 for you, but it will actually be the 22nd of December 2012 for me. So the question is, does the Mayan calendar date respect the international date line? And if we do have some interesting events happen, will they follow the date line around the planet? So if you don't hear me next week, if there isn't a show, folks, then you'll know that it's because I'm in the future and the world has already suffered a cataclysm, and that it's coming your way that very day, probably just about the time my show is due to go to air. A comforting thought. So at least you know that if you hear from me next week, then it's the 22nd for me, which means that down here we already made it through it and it was a non-event. But no, look, folks, there's not going to be a cataclysm. I'm just teasing with you there. There is a chance that we are passing through the line of the ecliptic. That would be interesting if we do. I'm not sure if that's exactly what's happening. There was one stage where I was pretty certain that that's what was happening, but at the moment I'm not so sure. But perhaps we are. If we are passing through the line of the galactic ecliptic, it could be interesting. There is a possibility, of course, that the Earth could change its direction of rotation, and that could be quite a fascinating thing to happen. They wouldn't have to worry about them trying to control the internet then, folks, because we probably wouldn't have any internet. Things would be greatly different as far as electromagnetics on this planet go, and I think it would throw a real spanner in the works. But if that does happen, just on the off chance that it does happen, just stay home for a couple of days, folks. Just stay there and don't worry about the fact that you're in a state of perpetual darkness for 3 days, or perhaps perpetual light for 3 days, depending on where you are located on the planet. And just stay home and let the world turn to chaos around you and come out in 3 days when it all starts spinning again and going in the right direction. Because, of course, there is a chance that could happen if we cross the line of the ecliptic, because, of course, the polarity will be reversed on the other side of the line. It's like when you go to the equator and you hold a bucket of water over the equator. I think I mentioned it on a show once or on somebody's show that if you go to the equator and you put a hole in a bucket of water and you stand there and you stand 10 inches north of the equator, you'll find that the water spirals out of the bucket clockwise. And if you stand south of the equator, you'll find that it spirals out of the bucket anti-clockwise. And you only got to move like 10 inches or a foot above the line of the equator, and you'll find that the water changes direction. But if you move the bucket and you hold it directly over the equator, you'll find it doesn't spin at all. It falls straight out of the bucket. And as above, so below. So if we are going from the polarity of the southern side of the galactic center and are entering into the northern side of the galactic center, there is, of course, a possibility that the Earth could change its direction of spin. Interestingly, there has been reports in ancient texts. I think there's even a report in the Bible of 3 days of darkness. And there were reports from the other side of the planet of 3 days of light. And this would indicate that the Earth at one time changed its direction of rotation. And the only thing that I can see that would cause this, apart from some type of planetary impact, which would likely destroy all life on the planet, would be Earth passing the line of the galactic ecliptic. And I would suggest that that's what caused it, folks, simply because all life on the planet wasn't destroyed. Of course, we did have a couple of planetary events way back, so we're told, and there are definitely remnants and traces of huge impacts that the Earth has suffered in the past. But I don't think that even if that happened, I don't know whether it would change its direction of spin. But who knows, folks, it may just happen this time. It would be interesting if it did, and then we resumed spinning in the other direction and we didn't have any more axial wobble. That would be interesting. It would really mess up all the astrologers, wouldn't it? They wouldn't be able to do the zodiac every month or every week, because the star alignments would probably be reasonably constant, except for planetary movements. But anyway, time will tell, folks. We've got about a week to find out. It's going to be a very, very interesting milestone in my life, passing that date, because I've been aware of this date ever since I was a child, and I find it absolutely amazing that it's now only a week away. Fascinating stuff, folks. What an incredible time to be alive. Of course, we might see that none of the above happens. We may see that consciousness doesn't shift. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. We may see any possibility of things, or we may simply see just another Friday, followed by just another Saturday, followed by just another year. But somehow I do think we are in for some big changes over the next year. One can only hope, but whatever the outcome, I'm certainly not counting on salvation from any type of cataclysmic event or ascension or anything like that. I'm expecting to have to take responsibility for myself. I'm expecting that the human race will actually find the power to do so on a collective level. I think that we will collectively take responsibility for ourselves this year, and things are going to change. I think the system is imploding because of its own mechanism. I don't think it can possibly last. It's become too apparent, too in your face for everybody. Everybody knows what's going on now. Everybody can see the corruption. Everybody's wondering why they are in such a state of hardship, why they are in such a state of struggle, why the police are getting so violent, why more and more laws are being made, why prices are going up and up, why it's becoming so difficult to live. People are beginning to become aware of it. And so this is causing the system to fail simply by default. And it's about time too, folks, because we really can't go on the way we are. If we do go on the way we are, then we're all going to end up in a global Palestine. That's what's happening, folks. What's happening here in Australia with the rise of prices, with the carbon tax? I mean, what we're seeing is that the people are being dispossessed. Another couple of years, they will be fully dispossessed. And then the Australian government will no doubt be able to adopt Israel's model of surplusing and warehousing people as it does in Gaza and the West Bank. You see, it's all connected, folks. That's why it's no good thinking that it's unique to your one particular country, whatever country you happen to be in, because it's a global situation. What we're seeing is that the human race right across the planet is being surplused. That's what's happening. they don't need this many people on the planet because they don't need this many people to run the ship of state, to run the machine, to run the corporate agenda, to run the strip mining operations. It's just not needed. They only needed a large amount of people to set up the infrastructure, and that's what they've done. And people need to start paying attention. They need to realize what's going on here, and they need to realize that all of the rules and all of the surplusing and all of the wars and all the problems that we face are all being created by public trustees that are no better or no worse than any other people. They're simply people that we elect into positions of trust. They've all breached that trust, and we continue to go along with it, probably because they've got little sociopaths running around in blue uniforms whose only goal in life is to obey the will of their masters. And that, unfortunately, is a very good description of modern police. These people just do not seem to be able to think for themselves at all. It's remarkable, really, because the blind obedience to law that they show and their unquestioning stance towards authority is exactly what brought about situations in the past, such as the Third Reich. I mean, every dictatorship that we've ever seen has been a result of blind obedience to law. And that's what we're seeing from our police. So you have to ask, well, who questions the law? When we have all of these pieces of legislation handed to police officers all the time, who actually questions it? Who vets it? Who makes sure that it's all good and all proper and serves the best interest of the people? What is it, the council, the Congress? I mean, obviously they don't, because most of these laws do not serve the best interest of the people. So when it comes down to a street level and police start inflicting the will of these politicians upon the people, that's where the stance obviously has to be made. I mean, the police themselves obviously should take that stance, but if they're not going to, then it must be done by the people. And the only way the people are ever going to be able to accomplish this is through the strength of numbers. So that's where it all comes down to the same thing, folks. It comes down to you finding your personal power, you realizing that everybody around you has that same power and is just as valid as you, and of simply breaking down those barriers, putting down your animosity towards your neighbors and connecting with these people. Because we have to do it, because if we don't, well, we're never going to be able to stand up against this system, and we are therefore not going to have a world to be able to leave to our children. Or if we do have a world, it's going to be something straight out of George Orwell's 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, all rolled up into one huge nanotechnology prison system. I mean, that's basically what we're heading for, folks, if we don't pay attention. But we can still fix it, folks. Change can be brought about, and it has to come from the people. It has to come from the hearts of the people. And that's why it's so important for people to change their heart space. And that's what I believe this time in history is. That's what I believe it's offering us. The question is, are you up to the challenge? How many people are up to the challenge? Because it is a challenge. Facing your own strength and standing in your own power is a very, very confrontational thing. It's very confronting for yourself to face yourself and to see the power that you have and to choose to use that power and stand in that power. It's very, very confronting because we're not used to seeing that part of ourselves. We're used to a nanny state. We're used to being looked after in almost every aspect of our lives as far as our social systems and social structure goes. And the rest of our lives, all we're used to doing to look after ourselves is to go out and work and collect paper and then buy stuff that other people have made. None of it's actually looking after ourselves at all. It's all based on an economic system. And it's very clever, folks, because it's through manipulation of the economic system that you thereby create the means to dispossess humanity of everything they own, all their power. You get to own the earth. All you have to do is introduce a system of commerce over the minds of those who live on the earth. That's all you have to do. And then by control of that monetary system, you can dispossess entire races and an entire species, and you can gain dominion over an entire planet. And that's what's being done. And unfortunately, we've got people within our legal structure and within our policing systems that are so blind to this and are so unable to think for themselves and are so subservient to the written word and in so much belief of a fictional legal and political system that they are willing to destroy the world in order to make sure all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed and all the points of law are catered for and that all is balanced in the books. That's all they care about, this whole left-brain perspective of reality. And they'll destroy everything around them in order to keep the books balanced and to keep things balanced in the eyes of a fictional legal system. That's just the way they think. And that's one of the scariest parts about it. One of the biggest challenges that we face is that we have people who are in positions of authority and who have the weapons and the means to do a lot of damage to the rest of the population who are actually that disconnected from reality that they would think this way. And not only that, but these are people who firmly believe with every fiber in their body that the fictional system they are supporting is actually real, because that's the only way they've ever been trained to think. And we could really do a deep discussion on this topic, I think, folks. I mean, it is a very important issue, and it's imperative for these people within these positions to wake up to reality a little bit. The challenge we face as a society is figuring out a way to help them wake up, help them understand that the written word is not the be-all and end-all of life. It's simply a construct which seems to mainly be used to prevent people from actually experiencing their lives to the best of their ability. But I think we're getting very close to the end of the show here, folks, and so I'm probably going to have to leave it there. Thank you for joining me on the show today. It has been a pleasure to talk to you again. Thank you to anyone who's ever helped out with the website. If you can help out with the website, folks, it really is in a state of dire need at the moment. Even my ability to be able to do these shows is very questionable at the moment. All of my resources have been vastly depleted. And if anybody can help out with any donations to the website, it would be absolutely wonderful at this time. I am going to start a Kickstart program soon for the Full Circle project, and that's truly the only way that will ever get off the ground as well, folks, is if people can offer some donations to get it going, because it's a big job, it's a big project. When I put the information up there, you'll see what I mean. I'm still formulating a lot of it in my mind. A lot of it is still developing as the days go by, because there's so much information coming in now that it's still being formed in my head. But if you can help with any contributions, it would be most appreciated. But look, I'm completely out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining me on the show today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Don't stress out too much over the next week as we head for the 21st of December 2012, and I will actually be back to speak to you on that very day, on that very evening next week. Please take good care until then. Stay safe, my friends. In La Cache.